It's a Sonic1029.com presentation. The Lane Mitchell Show podcast from Sonic1029.com.
Hey, this week on the podcast, Patrick Carney of the Black Keys calls in to talk about the new album Turn Blue, the latest tour, and his strange and surprising connection with Ike Turner. That, along with highlights from the past week's shows, heard weekdays 3 to 7 on Sonic1029 in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. If you enjoy the podcast, don't forget to rate it. And hey, follow me on Twitter at Lane Roo, LayneRoo, or of course on Facebook.
Lane Mitchell, podcast from Sonic1029.com.
It was 10 years ago today that Google first went public. Now, while it's a fantastic search engine, the intuitive searches kind of make me fear for the fate of mankind. You know, I'll start typing something like, how to file a restraining order. But three words in, Google is suggesting how to file the serial numbers off a handgun. I mean, maybe in this case it's a bad example, because it was equally helpful. And the man who invented the pop-up ad has apologized. Ethan Zuckerman writes, I wrote the code to launch the window and run an ad in it. I'm sorry, our intentions were good. Is it weird? But that kind of makes it a little bit better. And Lindsay Lohan's loud, shameless cry for attention continues. She's shopping for a book deal for a collection of short stories about her carnal conquests. Among them, Justin Timberlake, Orlando Bloom, Adam Levine, Heath Ledger, Zac Efron, and James Franco. Basically, she slept with every face on the magazine stand at Max. And finally, Kid Rock, the tuxedo t-shirt of rock and roll, is going to be a grandfather. His son, Bobby Ritchie Jr., is expecting his first child with his girlfriend. And while there's no way I could prove it either way, I would bet dollars to dimes that child was conceived in a pickup truck.
Lane Mitchell Podcast from Sonic1029.com.
TV weatherman Al Roker turns 60 today. Now, while I don't imagine you watch a whole bunch of weather out of the States, did you know that Al Roker and Lenny Kravitz are second cousins? In other news, looks do not run in the family. And Bon Jovi has dropped the selling price of his Manhattan condo from $42 million to $37.5 million. It has glass walls, terraces, a screening room, and get this, he's neighbors with Justin Timberlake. Yeah, kind of weird, picturing running next door to borrow a cup of sugar. JT answers the door. Although, Bon Jovi doesn't exactly strike me as a man who busies himself baking cookies. Yeah, cancel my bid for the Buffalo Bills. Too busy baking some snickerdoodles for Richie Sambora. Loves those things. And what's the weirdest thing you've ever heard of people collecting? Well, I'll bet it's not quite as strange as penises. A Croatian man has been arrested for allegedly collecting male genitalia from deceased patients at the hospital where he worked. Police arrested the man and found a few glass jars containing penises preserved in formaldehyde. Wouldn't that be kind of a shocker when you found that in the cold room? Dude, there's something wrong with these pickles. They have foreskins on them.
The Lane Mitchell Show. It's Lane Mitchell. Podcast from Sonic1029.com.
You've heard of the Ice Bucket Challenge, right? Well, have you heard of the Mrs. Doubtfire Challenge? It's a fundraiser for suicide prevention and involves squirting loads of whipped cream onto a plate, smashing it into someone's face, and going, "Hello!" in Mrs. Doubtfire's voice. The internet always is trying to convince us that everything is a thing. Either way, it's a good cause. Speaking of the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, how has Alanis Morissette not done a You Can't Do That on Television themed Ice Bucket Challenge? I mean, you think about it, that was pretty much that whole show, dumping stuff on people's heads, right? And a company called Red Eye Lewis has just won silver at the International Wine and Spirit Competition for its Vodkila, which you can probably figure out what it is just by the name alone, vodka and tequila in one. I don't know if they have a slogan yet, but I'd like to offer up this one. Vodkila, the official drink of texting your ex, fighting your best friend, and embarking on a night of sleep crime. And finally, Lionsgate Films is in talks to open a Hunger Games theme park. A movie where poor people kill each other to entertain the rich, and they want to turn that into a theme for an amusement park. Has Lionsgate actually seen that film? I think that's like the worst movie theme park idea ever. Second only to Schindler's List.
It's a Sonic1029.com podcast.
Peeing in the ocean. Good idea or bad? Well, the answer in less than 90 seconds. First, Want to play the 2015 Super Bowl halftime show? Sure. Grab your wallet. The NFL has whittled down its list to three finalists, Coldplay, Katy Perry, and Rihanna. It's now down to a bidding war. Which performer will either pay to perform at the show or give the NFL a portion of their earnings from their post-Super Bowl touring? Here's the weird part. When Red Hot Chili Peppers performed with Bruno Mars, it actually drew millions more viewers than the actual game did. And Jimi Hendrix's first two posthumous albums are set for reissue next month, The Cry of Love and Rainbow Bridge. Is it just me, or has Jimi Hendrix been far more productive in death than he ever was in life? Sad, really. And the American Chemical Society has released a new report saying it's not only harmless to pee in the ocean, but it's actually good for marine life. I'll warn you now, though, that opinion is not shared at SeaWorld. The justification scientists give, though, is that urine is mostly water, but it also contains sodium, chloride, and potassium ions, not entirely different from seawater. So essentially, the ocean is just one giant toilet. You know, I'm not sure I feel better about that.
It's Lane Mitchell, podcast from Sonic1029.com.
August the 25th. It was on this date in 1953 that DNA was first identified, a milestone in genetic science. You know, and to think, it probably started with scientists just posing that all-important question. Hey man, what do you think this stain is on the duvet cover in my hotel room? It is also Gene Simmons' 65th birthday. Hey, did you know that Gene Simmons is learning to speak both Japanese and Mandarin? He's also fluent in English, Hungarian, Hebrew, German, and a-hole. Come on, you heard what he said about depression after the Robin Williams thing. I love Kiss, but the guy was being kind of a jerk. And a South Carolina woman was arrested after hitting a man who farted in her face. She told police she was lying on the couch when her man came home a little drunk and let one rip in her face. An argument ensued that involved the 64-year-old man being beaten to a pulp. Why do I get the impression that these two aren't high society? I feel like this didn't happen just minutes before the couple's annual garden party. A butler likely won't be called in as a character witness in this case.
Head to LaneMitchell.com to stream this interview and other exclusive off-air content from Sonic 1029, courtesy of our willingness to give you more of what you want to make you happy.
Patrick Kearney of the Black Keys, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Hey, congratulations on the success of the new album.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been pretty exciting.
Oh, I can imagine. Well, Brothers was a huge breakthrough for you guys. El Camino, more successful still. And not just the albums, the tours, too. How do you go about taking something so big and successful and making it even bigger?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, the way Dan and I have always worked is we just, we started playing the smallest venues, I guess, a band can play. And it's slowly gotten to where it is now. And along the process, we've just been contorting into whatever it needs to be, like as far as lighting and people we need to take out on the road. It's kind of been like this seamless, evolving thing.
Well, Thick Freakness was recorded in your basement on an old four-track. I read somewhere that it was recorded during a single 14-hour recording session. How did the process of making Turn Blue compare to that?
Well, yeah, Thick Freakness, we recorded like two of the songs on that record. We recorded over the summer on a four-track, and then the rest were recorded in one session on this small little Tascam 8-track tape machine I have. And this record, yeah, we spent like 40 days in Sunset Sound, and we spent more time making this record than we had on any other album, but partially because we didn't feel rushed to make a record, and we actually made two records. We recorded like 30 songs. So we just were taking our time. But back then, when we made Thick Freakness, we'd been talking to a bunch of labels like Warner Brothers and Epitaph, Fat Possum, and we basically were waiting for like a contract to come in that seemed interesting, and we ended up just deciding to go with the smallest label that had offer, which is Fat Possum. And we told them we wanted a record out in April, so they told us that we needed to turn the record in the next week. So we just went right in my basement and recorded the record and sent it to them in FedEx.
Yeah, no pressure, right?
No pressure. I mean, we still are pretty DIY, like really hands-on recording.
You know, in an era where more and more bands are, you know, tracking albums on Pro Tools rigs and mixing in their basement and auto-tuning vocals, you guys tracked down probably one of the weirdest, most obscure mixing consoles ever. Like, gear nerds like me haven't even heard of this thing. Do you want to tell us a little bit of the history of this piece?
Well, yeah, that's why we went to Benton Harbor. when we do go to studios, we like to pick studios that have something unique. They have a studio called the Key Club in Benton Harbor, and they have Sly Stone's desk, which is a Flickinger mixing console. It's completely overbuilt and a nightmare to work on. Ike Turner had one as well, and they have a really bizarre sound.
Wasn't writing with Ike Turner how you met up with Danger Mouse?
Yeah, we weren't writing with him. We were writing songs for him and then sending them. We were like making demos in Akron and then sending them to Danger Mouse. His idea was he wanted us to write an Ike Turner comeback record. And the process was just going really slow. And
probably slowed down even more when Ike Turner died.
Yeah. We ended up getting like 3 songs basically done, but it took months to get to that point. And Dan and I, once again, really needed to put a record out and wanted to, so we took most of the songs and put them on Attack and Release. But there are versions of Ike Turner singing the songs, Lies, from Attack and Release and I Got Mine.
Wow. Where would a guy hear those?
In my house.
Well, I'll be sure to come and visit. Let's get back to Turn Blue. The album art kind of looks like those old X-ray glasses you ordered from like the back of comic books in the 60s. Why did you choose that?
Oh, we named the record Turn Blue. It's a catchphrase from this guy named Goulardi who had like a TV show, late night TV show in Cleveland, where he basically hosted sci-fi movies and horror films. And he's just like this character that basically just would announce the movies and do these little skits. And he's kind of like a cross between a beatnik and like Dracula. But the show existed like in 62, 64. So my brother Mike and I got together and were talking about that. It's about like the imagery for like X-ray specs and Twilight Zone and Outer Limits.
Well, you know, even some of the songs like in Weight of Love, you know, there's like theremin or old school kind of sci-fi sort of textures. Are you a sci-fi guy?
Sort of. I like really bad sci-fi movies. I can't like watch Aliens, actually. Aliens I find boring, but I can watch Beneath the Planet of the Apes like all day long.
The cheesier the better.
Yeah, but I also, you know, I'm obsessed with 70s and late 60s stuff.
Well, compared to previous albums, too, I would say Turn Blue is 50% less sexy than previous Black Keys albums, 30% more melancholic. I would say this album has some of the most intimate moments of your whole catalog. And, you know, of course, Dan was going through sort of a very public divorce at the time. Do you think that sort of enhanced the emotion in the songs? Did it hinder it? Did it factor in at all?
Yeah, I think it factored in a lot. You know, we recorded the music before Dan had final lyrics. You know, we were writing the melodies, and that was the space that he was in for sure. You know, if we went in and made a record tomorrow, it would sound much different than Turn Blue. And if we went in to the studio 6 months from now, it would sound much different than whatever we did tomorrow. You know, so
because of that, is it hard to recreate? Well, because you're in a different space mentally now than you were when you wrote the songs initially, is it sort of hard to recreate those emotions live?
No, I mean, I think like every time we do a record, it reflects exactly our mood and whatever we're into at the time. And I think if anything, it just reminds us, it takes us back to the headspace we were in. Like you mentioned Dick Freakness, you know, when I hear that record, when we play those songs a lot, I'm reminded of what it felt like to, you know, live in a house with like 4 other dudes and have a rat-infested stove. All the things that were going on at that time.
At gig to gig in the Gray Ghost?
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to talk about Jack White or Justin Bieber or go down that rabbit hole, but the media at large, I feel like, have sort of an insatiable appetite for celebrity opinions on everything. But the minute you provide one, they jump down your throat. Do you find you have to be extra careful about what you say and who you say it to? And does that make it hard to have friends? Is that lonely?
I mean, I'm obviously not too careful about it, because I keep getting in trouble. But yeah, I think like somebody really cares or is shocked by the fact that I have something dismissive to say about somebody like Justin Bieber, then I think they have no idea what's going on.
Let's get back to the album, Turn Blue. You mentioned earlier it's an old expression, sort of a shout-out to your home state, really. And you do, as a band, seem very proud to be from Akron, proud to be from Ohio. But like so many, you're sort of seduced by the bright lights of Nashville. What is it about that city that draws so many musicians?
I moved from Akron to New York. I lived in New York for a year. And then kind of got overwhelmed. It's just so hard to relax New York City when you come off a tour and stuff. Dan wanted to move to Nashville. And our management company's here, and we have friends here. It's just like a bigger version of Akron, basically.
Well, I know Dan has been working with Lana Del Rey. You know, you produced some stuff for Sheepdog, some other bands. Any other interesting collaborations in the works? Writing with anybody?
I worked on this Tennis record. Their second single came out yesterday. I did some stuff with this band Wild Bell. I'm not sure what's happening with that. And I did some stuff with this guy from Canada, from Vancouver, named Tobias Gesso Jr. I did a few songs on his new record that's coming out sometime next year. But yeah, I'm constantly working on stuff.
Black Keys were at Rexall Place October 28th with Jake Bugg. Anything else you care to share about the show?
Just that we're excited to get back to Canada. We're excited to get back on tour and play the new songs. And I think, like, the way these songs have been developing, there's a lot more space in these songs than the songs that are out to me now. They've become, I think, better live.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us. Patrick Carney of the Black Keys.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on.
The Lane Mitchell Show. Mitchell Show. Podcast. Yeah. Like what you're hearing? Check out the Garner Andrews Show to Go podcast at sonic1029.com.